Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Ryan O'Halloran.
Oh, we got a full house today. Ryan O'Halloran's in, Mr. Sunshine Positivity, fresh off the practice field from the last 2 days of OTAs. Plenty of stuff that you saw that we can't discuss this morning, Ryan. Yeah. What can you talk about? Look, OTAs, as you said, there's a lot of positional flexibility, guys getting tried out. This is not, you don't walk out here in May and say this is what the finished product is leading towards, right? This is a kind of an experimentation time.
Yeah, I'll hit on Ramsey real quick. You know, they call the good news, and they call it, that's great. I mean, the best, and I wrote today in the paper, the best news would have been no surgery, but I think he went there. The second opinion was the surgery. I mean, I think he went there knowing he was going to have it. It's just less lousy news. The fact he'll be back for camp, but this is two surgeries on that knee right now. ESPN stood by their story that it was microfracture surgery.
From high school.
Yeah, the Ramsey's camp in Florida State, they did not dispute that story when it came out 14 months ago. So do what you want with that. I thought the most interesting nugget that Gus revealed about Jalen yesterday was he's going to start learning nickel, which to me means I think they're going to pivot a little bit and make Prince and Mukamara just an outside guy and maybe move Ramsey inside until Colvin gets back.
And then Colvin comes in to play the nickel with Ramsey trying to take a Mukamara spot if he's ready for it.
Inherit that spot.
Correct. You know, understood.
Because Prince would be a sub-package guy, but that shows you what they think of Ramsey just in a very short time with him. And Devon House told the great story is the DBs were running sprints last week, going pretty hard. Ramsey he said, felt like 10 yards ahead of us and he was jogging.
Yeah.
So they feel like once he's back to full strength, he'll be a big part of their defense.
And look, you're right. The best thing would have been no injury whatsoever to his knee. The second best would have been something that required a couple weeks of rest and sit down. But as opposed to a full repair of the meniscus, you know, getting shaved, and I feel like I know a little bit about it because that's what I've got, and I've been putting it off getting done myself. That timetable to return does set him up to be a full participant in training camp if he doesn't have any further setbacks.
Yes, and you know it's 8.5 weeks report for camp, so another half week after that before they go pads. So, you know, that's the bright side for the Jaguars. Other part is you like seeing Fowler out there, obviously, a year after his surgery. He feels he's 100%. But there's other nagging things. Jeremy Parnell breaks his hand first OTA.
Right. How did that happen?
He went in the locker room, so I couldn't ask him. But like Nick Jacobs broke his hand a couple weeks ago. I was able to say, what happened? He said, I was just hitting the sled. So if you just hit it wrong. But I don't know if Parnell, if it was a hand where he just was jammed into somebody else during a pass rush thing.
What is the timetable on that, by the way? Have you heard an official timetable?
Parnell?
Yeah.
He had the cast on yesterday and was doing non-team stuff. So it's probably one of those things where he could play with it. So I bet he'll have the cast off in a month.
Gotcha. To be fully cleared in about a month.
Yeah.
All right. Ryan O'Halloran's in the house. If you want to talk OTAs, what he's allowed to talk about anyway. That may have been the full report right there, Tony.
I got some other stuff.
All right, we got some nuggets from Ryan O'Halloran. We've got the audio from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles from yesterday. We'll get to. We'll continue our previews. We started last week with the Green Bay Packers. We had Wayne Larrabee, the voice of the Pack, on with us last week. Michael Gelkin covers the Chargers for the Union Tribune in San Diego. He will join us coming up in a little under an hour from now as we'll preview once per week the Jags opponents as they appear on the upcoming schedule. Got a couple of questions out there for you today. One is the official question of the day, and also threw a Twitter poll at you today. The question of the day, what is your favorite Jaguars game day tradition? This is not something that the Jags do. I'm not talking about the drumline or anything like that, although if that's your favorite thing, that's fine. We're talking about a tradition that you do, whether it's getting up, wearing the same shirt, going to a tailgate at the exact same spot. I'm not talking about a superstition necessarily. Just what do you do on game day that you most look forward to?
The Publix tailgate show every morning.
There you go. I would think that would be it. And I would think as well, if you do vote on this on Facebook or Twitter, you would be required to play the Hank Williams Jr. family tradition video that I accompanied the question with, because it's a great sing-along kind of song. Also, we got a Twitter poll out there. as to which one of these guys, if you were to ask people who's going to have the most sacks on the team this year, when you think optimism, people would vote for Dante Fowler Jr., right? That's the guy you got brought in here to produce those kind of numbers. We asked you today a little bit more off the radar beyond Dante Fowler Jr. We got Ryan Davis, who has been one of the most productive per-snap sack guys on the Jags the last few years. Malik Jackson, who can certainly sack the quarterback, but at playing defensive tackle, you don't think of high sack numbers typically. Yannick Ngakoue, who will be a backup Leo, perhaps the number two Leo, maybe not, though. We'll see if he earns his spot there. And Dan Scuda, who will play some auto, he'll play some lotto, he'll play some slotto, he'll play wherever they can get him on the field to try to help him rush the passer.
So sick of these acronyms.
Going back to strong side linebacker?
Yes. How about sack guy?
Sack guy. Pass rusher.
Pass rusher.
Edge. We call him an edge. But if you call him an edge, you have to capitalize every letter in it. He's an edge. So you can vote on that one we'll leave that up until tomorrow, but the voting's already underway. Ryan Davis, Malik Jackson, Yannick Ngakoue, Dan Scuda, which one of those Jags will have the most sacks out of that quartet in 2016? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you. 641-1010, the phone number. Also the text line driven by Duval Ford. Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and at Ryan O'Halloran. And the Jaguars today, Metro Rooter Wednesday, continues and picks up in a moment on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
A much better practice today. I think it's just, you know, us figuring out the tempo, getting back in line. Like I said, yesterday it was a lot of the younger players, but having a chance to meet with them and showing them on tape what we're asking. Just much cleaner today. Much more competitive practice.
Much more competitive, sure. Much cleaner.
Sure. His helmet is driving me crazy. Construction site.
You're enjoying the Hacker's tweet. Hacker's currently getting a tour.
Does he realize I took the first tour? If you're wearing regular glasses, you don't need the safety glasses.
Right. I was trying to figure, what would be the proper procedure if you're a glasses wearer such as yourself,
and
right?
We went outside, and I had sunglasses on. And no safety goggles. And when we came back inside, I put my regular glasses on.
Dude, looking out my back door.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, there you go. If you want to see if Hacker were in the Village People, okay? I don't know if you – maybe we should do a poll one day. If Hacker were in the remake of the Village People, who would he be? Would he be the cop? Would he be the Indian chief? Who would he be? Today, he's the construction worker, so you can go check that out on his Twitter timeline at 1010XL Hacker.
Heart Hacker.
There he goes. He's double gogging it. He's got the double goggles. Hey, my goodness. You got to protect those peepers, man.
Why doesn't my heart hat have it? I'm kind of a big deal.
It's on the back. I can't turn this thing around. What do I turn it around? It's going to say, it's kind of a big hat. There you have it. I like his profile picture. That's a good profile picture. That's him
at
Fenway.
Is that the old ball yard?
That's him in Fenway.
He's finally changed it.
Okay. He did. He changed it up. He's
Daffy.
He's switching up. I don't think he's going to go with the double goggle shot as his official profile picture. But he's Hacker's
not now. Not now.
Hacker's going to give you a full recap, I'm sure, of all the brand new additions to EverBank. Coming up today on the Midday Chalk.
All this concrete.
It's a lot of they're pouring concrete. Ugh. Big truck. They did have a mixer down there the other day when we came out. Man, I tell you what, O'Halloran, it's dusty down there right now. There's still a lot of work going on. Tony and I, no reference to the morning show, but we got drilled a little bit yesterday.
Yes, we did.
They started with the drilling right above us, but it wasn't so bad. The drill beats the jackhammer on the list of things you want to have going on right above you while you're doing a radio show.
Ryan got the full experience of the jackhammer.
Yes.
He was in there with me that day.
it's a beauty.
It was kind of funny, though. Like, the drilling started, 10 minutes before Paul Posluszny was supposed to come in with us, coming off the field. So we were like, are you serious right
now?
Good
timing award.
And so Paul was there. It had been quiet for about 8-10 minutes. And then right in the middle of Paul trying to answer a question, I felt bad for him because I don't think he knew exactly how to react to it. Because the drilling started right above us, and you could see him, try to kind of get a little bit louder in his answer. And we told him, you know, that...
Hey, we're not without any kind of danger.
That's our adversity. Like, they go through adversity on the field. Our adversity is guys banging on walls while we're trying to do a show.
By the way, Tony, you're pretty brave. You don't know if we're in any danger or not. You have no idea if we're in danger. One false move, buddy, and the whole suite level is coming down on our head. All right? And we'll talk about making omelets and cracking eggs.
My family will be set for life.
Yes. So please make that happen. Please. But wait until we're back there tomorrow. We're at the 1010 XL World Headquarters today. We're going to meet with Gus tomorrow, you and I, after the show. That's the plan anyway. And we'll air that interview on Friday's broadcast. But right now, let's hear a little bit from Gus from yesterday. Ryan, you were talking about Devon House, talking about Jalen Ramsey being a fast learner and picking things up. This was Gus's response when asked to comment on that.
He was. I tell you why. Because we weren't going to give him any nickel reps. We weren't going to teach him nickel. But we felt like he was progressing. And I know I had conversations with him about, you know, when we're starting to talk about the nickel, you know, pay attention and start listening up. And that's a, you know, proof right there that he's picking it up really quick.
When he gets on the field in August, do you expect him to still work outside? Or are you gonna...
That's what I'd like to do. I mean, we're going to be, you know, make sure we don't put too much on his plate, but if he can handle it, you know, we'll teach him both.
Dynamite follow-up right there in the middle of that answer. I thought that really moved the conversation along at that point in time. So, like you said, start him inside, move him outside. Look, we referred to him, as many have, as kind of a movable chess piece, right? Multifaceted, can play a lot of positions. Ultimately, could probably play just about any position in the secondary. It wouldn't be surprised to see him do that at some point in his career, even within the course of a game, you know, play some snaps in safety and some sub packages, what have you, but take full advantage of all of his capabilities.
I think that's what they're going to do with Miles Jack too. They're going to be on the field. It's just a matter of where they're going to be lined up. But I would think, you know, just looking at Gus's comments, listening to it again, is on first and second down, Ramsey would play outside, and at least early on, if they feel he picks it up, that he would move inside for those third downs.
Right. So that's the tentative plan as things stand right now.
Yeah, and look, that's really the shame of the injury to Ramsey and the fact that Miles Jack can't be here because of this just archaic rule regarding when he's actually allowed to be with the team, is these are two pieces that I don't even think they have a real good idea of exactly how they want to use them yet, and they can't put them out on the practice field. As you described during Crosstalk, Ryan, this is the time when you experiment with a bunch of different stuff and see what you think is really going to work, so that when you get to camp, you can say, okay, you're going to be doing this. And these two movable pieces, I don't know how good an idea they're going to have of what they can do with them before training camp even gets started.
Yeah, and plus now Amakamura has been out a couple of days, so you don't know how long he's going to be out. And, you know, maybe what's their comfort level with him playing inside? So right now they sort of have three outside corners for two spots. And so one of those guys is going to have to play inside until Colvin comes back.
Gus still talking about the secondary yesterday after practice, and that strong safety battle is expected to be a pretty good one. He talked about how James Sample has looked thus far.
It's good. I mean, he's, you know, I think we've really pared down what we're asking out of the strong safeties, and I think that's helped him. We took less off their plate, and especially for a guy like Sam, where he's coming in and kind of learning it because he didn't get as many reps last year, I think it's benefited him. So I think he just, you know, keeps playing faster and faster until we, you know, get to training camp. Right now we're just checking, you know, for busts and, you know, technique things, but he's progressing.
How do you see this? Is it a pure open competition in your eyes, or is this one where Jonathan Cyprian's going to get the benefit of the doubt, and it's got to kind of, you kind of beat him like 60-40 to knock him out of the spot?
I think it's probably more like that. I mean, my stance on Cyprian, I've seen enough. I'd make it completely open, if not just name Sample the starter.
I wouldn't name him the starter because I haven't seen enough of Sample, me personally, but I would make it an open competition as well.
That, I think they more would lean on it's Cyprian's job to lose. He would have the upper hand because they feel that the way they have this defense set up now, it plays into what he should have been doing the first 3 years. So for him, it's a golden opportunity,
right,
to get that second contract.
All right, moving on with Gus now, switching it over to the offensive side here for a minute. He was asked about the offense being so young in the last couple of seasons, and now that they've maybe got a little seasoning under their belt? Does he see a difference in them at this stage?
I think you can only be young once, right? You know, for us to keep saying that, hey, we're young and we're young at certain spots, you know, I think that's no longer us. So, yeah, I can tell. I can tell with the offensive line, you know, just the package. It's allowed Blake to have so much more time, and he's not learning the beginning stages of the offense. It's kind of football 301 and football 401, which I think is pretty cool. Brandon Linder, how much he stepped in. That's a challenge now. He's going to play in center, makes all the calls, and just his progression. But I think being in the system last year helped him. So, yeah, I'm pretty pleased with it. I'm pleased defensively. Guy like Gibson. He showed up again today now. For him to come in and learn a new system and play as fast as he is, the arrow's pointing up definitely with him.
I tweeted this yesterday. Early candidate for Gus's favorite player on the roster is Gibson. He's brought him up both days without being asked about him. They feel like they finally have found the right guy to play that free safety role in their fourth year.
Which should open a lot of other things up with what they're trying to do.
And we've talked about it since free agency basically ended that, look, there's a lot of people, and I may be on this list included on it, is Gibson may be the most important addition they made this offseason. Just how badly they needed somebody to play kind of that center field role in this defense so that everything else in front of them in that back seven can work the way they want it to. And they just haven't had it, and it looks like they may have it now finally with Gibson. You heard him commenting about Gibson at the end of that comment. There was a follow-up asked about exactly what Tashawn Gibson has been doing since they showed up for these OTAs.
That's a big thing for him. I mean, right now, the things we're having him do, it's more about precision every play. And he's taken ownership on that. We saw him. We've been asking a free safety here. One of the things is to cover from red line to red line. Yesterday, he did it. And it showed up on tape, and that's exactly what we're looking for. So it's getting, you know, a guy that is closer to, you know, some of the fits that we're looking for him to do.
I agree with you, Tony. We talked about it quite a bit. I mean, look, they're all important. All the additions, particularly when you're talking about maybe five new starters on the defensive side. I don't know if anyone's singularly more important than Tashawn Gibson to get a guy. I think he's 26, former Pro Bowler at a safety position that's been such a need and a hole for your team for the last few years. So we'll see if he can keep it up. The early returns are positive. T-Wig jumping into the fray. That's how you do it. T-Wig has been to how many collective press conferences has T-Wig been to? Not many, right? Because
no.
T-Wig's not a, you know, everyone's got their own role. Not everybody covers press conferences. And so he'll be down there at some throughout the course of training camp and OTAs and stuff like that. But he jumped right in there yesterday and asked us, Bradley, about the ideal scenario. Yes.
These are for everybody to ask questions.
Anyone can ask.
Anybody who's there can ask a question.
Anyone's there. I know you appreciate it.
Gus will answer that.
I know you and Hayes appreciate it, so it's not a three-way conversation.
Don't be afraid, people.
I gotcha. All right. So T-Wig asks, what's the ideal scenario regarding carries for Chris Ivory and T.J. Yeldon?
It's equal and they all have 100 yards. You know, I can write a script. You know, I think they're a pretty good group. The one thing I appreciate about the guys that we brought in, the free agents and the draft picks, is just how, you know, sometimes I sit there and I look and I go, boy, it's going to take some time to bring this team together. We've got different personalities coming from different areas, but it really hasn't. I mean, Chris Ivory and T.J. Yeldon are tight. They walk out together. They're in the meetings together. It's unbelievable. So I really think it's a mindset of this group that, hey, we're going to compete on the field, but all we want is us to be our best, and let us see the results. And I think it's genuine. It feels authentic to me, and I think that's with every position. So, you know, ideally, you know, that hey, we end up having enough rushing yards that it helps the pass game and putting up points on the board.
Ideally, with Ivory and Yeldon, they realize if this team is any good, there's going to be more than enough carries for them both to be productive. So I think they look at each other as being able to help each other.
Be great if they each had around 200 carries. That's the number, kind of the number I've been saying. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
One guy's at 180, one's at 220. It's going to be somewhat game flow and all that going on. You're going to see, I think, Yeldon more on third down, catching passes. You're going to see Chris Ivory at least early get the opportunity at the goal line. Wasn't great in that department last year in short yardage, but that style of play, you would think, is going to be one that's conducive to picking up some of those short yardage situations.
Yeah, I still wish we had at least seen Yeldon a little bit in short yardage goal line last year so we'd have some idea of how well he can or can't do
right.
That.
Right, they didn't get many opportunities and maybe didn't, you know, I don't remember how many chances were there other than, of course, you know, four straight shots.
Oh, London.
That was bad. But
there weren't a lot of other
They're one of the ones that jump in. But then again, I wonder if they, you know, they shied away from some second and three, third and three, and they threw the ball instead because, you know, TJ Yeldon in the early returns, like in the preseason, you got to learn to get that pad level down a little bit, right? He got stood up a few times. So, hey, you know, learning process. He's a young guy.
Sure.
As long as one of them sticks it in there, I don't think anybody cares.
Heck, he got hurt in the scrimmage.
Right.
On a goal line play, did TJ Yeldon last year. One last comment here from Gus Bradley. After practice, we'll get to some more of his comments a little bit later in the show. But talking about the running back position, Chris Ivory, and just what kind of player he is away from the field.
I mean, his demeanor, I'm not saying he's real talkative. He's got a kind of a quiet disposition, but people gravitate towards him now. He's got that that factor where people go to him and talk to him and ask him a lot of questions, and he's really a pro, the way he takes care of his body. So I think people recognize maybe his past success, and they gravitate towards him and because of his personality. So he's been a welcome addition.
Real quick, running backs don't need to be vocal to be a leader because players in that locker room respect that position so much, what they go through physically. They can lead by example.
And I think you saw how much his peers respect him in particular. His running style draws your attention. It's kind of a man's way of doing it, right? And, you know, the leading rusher in the AFC last year, one of only seven 1,000-yard rushers in the entire National Football League, earned Chris Ivory a spot in the NFL's top 100, which, by the way, the next 10 gets released tonight.
This stat coming from Mike Clay. I think he's now with ESPN, I believe. But anyways, he says that TJ Yeldon only had four carries within 3 yards of the end zone last year.
Doesn't he do both? Is he doing ESPN and Pro Football Focus?
I believe he just moved over to ESPN.
Permanently? All right. Give me the stat again because I totally blew it.
TJ Yeldon only had four carries within 3 yards of the end zone last year.
Okay. So, yeah, not many opportunities. But then again, you know, is that because they just weren't in that down a distance that often? Or when they did get into some of that range, they felt like, you know what, our better option is to throw the football.
Yeah, well, the next stat to look up would be how many did the team have.
Right, how many overall.
If it was like, Toby had those four.
Right.
Maybe
if there were 10 others and they didn't go to Yeldon, then you'd say, okay, they're trying to maybe massage that a little bit. All right, like Tony said, more Gus Bradley coming up, more Blake Bortles coming up. But we'll do this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL a little bit early today because we have Michael Gelkin at the top of the hour. He covers the Chargers for the Union Tribune in San Diego, the week two opponent for the Jaguars in the House of Horrors out there on the West Coast. At least it has been historically for the Jaguar franchise. With Ron O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, time for this date in football history. It's presented this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. All right, guys, 1939 in this date, Carl Stork became the third NFL president. NFL president became the office of the commissioner later on. So there have been 8 full-time presidents / commissioners of the National Football League, okay? We know that the last 3... Roger Goodell, Paul Tagliabue, Pete Rozelle. Everybody's got that. I just gave you Carl Stork. Can you name one other president or commissioner? Just one of the other 4.
Burt Bell.
Burt Bell, good man. Hall of Famer Burt Bell. Maybe the most influential commissioner. Maybe prior to Rozelle, certainly he was in the early days. Tony, you got another one? Tanya? Come
no.
on. You've heard of this guy. Jim Thorpe was the first president of the NFL. He did it for 1 year back in 1920. So there you have it. On this date in 1939, Carl Stork took over as the third president from Joe Carr, who took over from Jim Thorpe. Famous birthdays for this date. How about Cookie Gilchrist? You've heard the name, right? You remember Cookie Gilchrist at all? You remember anything about Cookie Gilchrist?
No.
Cookie Gilchrist played high school football, and Paul Brown offered him a contract when he was a junior in high school. And there's a lot of contention that it may have been illegal to even attempt to do that. He went to camp with the Browns, and then Paul Brown backed out on a promise to put him on the roster. So he's used up his high school eligibility at this point. He went to the CFL straight out of high school, never played college football, was a big-time performer in the CFL, came to the AFL with the Buffalo Bills, and was MVP his first year and led the league in rushing several times. A 4-time Pro Bowler, a 3-time first-team All-Pro, Cookie Gilchrist, passed away in 2011 at the age of 75. He was born in this state in 1935. Former Jaguar Sean Bowens, a guard who started 9 games in the inaugural season for the Jags, turns 48 years old today, born in 68. Happy birthday to Sean. Tarik Glenn, who was the longtime blindside protector for Peyton Manning, turns 40 today. 3-time Pro Bowler, was born in 1976. Brian Urlacher, born in the state in 1978, went to Chicago for the draft. Did you see all the many billboards? You were at the draft, right? You were here for the draft. Oh, yeah. My bad. There are billboards all over Chicago with Urlacher with the new hair. You know, he's got the hair transplant, so it's everywhere you go in Chicago. How many Pro Bowls for Brian Urlacher do you think?
11.
I was going to go 6.
8. We'll split the difference. 8 Pro Bowls, 4-time first-team All-Pro, and also born on this date in 1984. Sean Merriman turns 34 years old today. His career went lights out after he got caught using performance-enhancing drugs and got injured after his 3rd season and made the Pro Bowl in his first 3. However, that does it for This State in Football. It's presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you need cosmetic work done, or you're in the market for a family dentist, call 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That is This State in Football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
I mean, well, we already knew the destinations for Super Bowls 51 and 52 the next couple years. After this season, the Super Bowl will be in Houston. Next season, it'll be in Minnesota. Yesterday, the NFL announced the host cities for Super Bowls 53 through 55. Super Bowl 53 will be in Atlanta. 54 will be in South Florida. They're not calling it Miami. They're just calling it South Florida. And Super Bowl 55 will see the game return to Los Angeles. Mark Davis, the Oakland Raiders owner, is still optimistic about the Raiders potentially moving to Las Vegas. Davis, speaking to the media at the NFL owners meeting, said that the preliminary reports about the viability of the Vegas market have been positive. The Raiders were left out of the negotiations to move to LA in the short term, with San Diego getting an exclusive 2-year window to negotiate becoming the stadium and city partner of the returning LA Rams. Cincinnati Bengals Pro Bowl tight end Tyler Eifert is going to have surgery on his ankle to repair an injury he suffered at the Pro Bowl. The ankle reportedly didn't heal the way the team wanted it to without the surgery, so now he has to go under the knife and could miss the beginning of the regular season for the Bengals. And the NFL at the owners' meetings yesterday did vote to the replay rules they put in effect for the postseason last year, where the yardage marker, the time on the clock, and down and distance basically can be reviewed by New York. Essentially, it goes back to a central hub that's going to be extended into the regular season for the 2016 year.
I don't have an issue if they ultimately say pretty much everything's reviewable, as long as they limit the reviews. You can't review every play you choose to. You can review any play, but there's a limit, like there is now. 3 max. You get one right, you get another one right, you get a 3rd one, so be it. It wouldn't take any more time. It would just open up the possibility of correcting other things that are clearly correctable, I think.
Yeah, and the last thing you want to do is have the game, you know, come grinding to a halt. You don't want it to become college football, which is basically unwatchable.
No, you don't want it. You don't want all the stops and starts of that. But at the same time, you know, you hate to see a playoff game, or any game for that matter, turned on a clearly incorrect call. Some people think that's part of the beauty and charm of sports. I don't happen to be one of those people, unless it goes for my team. All right, that's just the way it goes.
Look, they've had some basically just clerical issues on the field where they mark it at the wrong spot. I mean, clearly just mark it at the wrong spot, skip it down. Like, it's happened in the NFL in the last couple of years. That kind of thing, a timing issue, I shouldn't have to use a challenge for something that blatantly dumb on the part of the officials. There ought to be someone that just hits a button and says, you got to fix this now.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of what this review is.
It's clock doesn't start for
15
seconds.
Yeah, we're fixing this somewhere else. We're not relying on the guys on the field to necessarily do this anymore.
I'm with you. All right. And like we said at the top of the program, selfishly, I love the Super Bowl being in Atlanta and South Florida. They call it South Florida because it's not in Miami. That's not where the stadium is. So
just as long as New Orleans doesn't get one.
Why?
I hate one of my least favorite cities of all time.
How come?
It smells.
Because it's fun.
The only thing worse would be if Orlando smells. Got one, right?
Orlando's never getting any. They shouldn't get anything good in Orlando, but they can have
New
the
Orleans,
Pro Bowl. why they can have the Pro Bowl.
New Orleans is just a cesspool.
That's cool. I understand why you feel that way, and I probably wouldn't want to spend more than a week there, but you know, once every 4 or 5 years, it's a fun place for me, and it is drivable. I like, that's all I really, you know, the ease and convenience, the quick flight to Indy, no problem. Drive to Atlanta, drive to South Florida, drive to Tampa, all those, that makes it a lot easier for me.
Well, in the other places, you sort of know the lights are going to stay on.
This is true.
What an embarrassment that city is.
Well, jeez. All right, there you go.
Tell us how you really feel.
Hey, you know, a lot of people think New Orleans, they think, hey, parties, good time.
I can go somewhere else. Revelry. I'd rather go to New York, Chicago, Dallas.
Dallas. Everyone thinks Dallas. What a.
Nobody says fun like a mechanical bull.
What a party city that is. All right. We got to take a time out here. We're going to come back. Other side, we'll talk about the Jaguars' week two opponent. We do one every week, and we did Green Bay last week. The Jags will take it on the road for the first time in 2016 after the opener to take on the San Diego Chargers. Michael Gelkin joins us from the Union Tribune in San Diego. That's next. It's Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
With the third pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the San Diego Chargers select Joey Bosa, defensive end, Ohio State.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Well, they're able to keep it a secret for a long time. They're on Joey Bosa, they said, right from the very beginning. And you know what? He may turn out to be a great player. I don't have anything against Joey Bosa. Could have easily ended up here in Jacksonville. Jaguar fans were definitely happy, though, because it meant the greater likelihood that Jalen Ramsey would be coming here. By the way, on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, quickly before we go to Michael Gelkin. Wow, I'm from New Orleans. I lived in Dallas for a long time. Ryan, do you have anything to say about Memphis, St. Louis, or Tampa? Live there, too. You're on a roll. Why stop now?
I like Tampa.
Okay. Memphis?
Only been through the airport. Wasn't a fan. St. Louis.
They got that arch.
St. Louis is fine.
St. Louis is fine. He likes Tampa.
Not your airport stinks. Airport.
All right, everybody likes San Diego. Michael Gelkin with the Union Tribune in San Diego joins us now to talk Chargers. What's up, Michael? How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How you doing?
We're good, doing thanks. Fine. Everybody loves San Diego, right, Michael? I mean, at least from afar, that seems to be, what do they call it, America's finest city? What is the slogan out there?
It is America's finest city, and it's really not bad. I'm born and raised here. It's a hard place to leave every time I travel for various NFL games. It's always good to be back here.
It's always 71 degrees and sunny, right? That's what they lead us to believe anyway out there on the West Coast. Michael, before we get into the roster turnover and the building for 2016, just where things stand right now in your mind, a year from now, will we be talking about the San Diego Chargers still, or do you think we're going to be talking about the L.A. Chargers?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm from San Diego. I live in San Diego. Whether or not I'll be in San Diego in another year is an entirely different question. And right now, there's so much uncertainty still about what the Chargers' long-term future is in terms of it being San Diego, Los Angeles. I mean, there's so much that remains to be seen on the subject. And right now, the Chargers are in the process of collecting. They're looking for 100,000 City of San Diego voter signatures so that they can get a November 8th stadium initiative on the ballot. And there's a ton of confusion around it. I mean, we don't know yet whether or not it'll require simple majority, or right now it seems it'll take a 2/3 majority to pass, which is pretty darn difficult to do. I think you could put more sunshine on a ballot and you're not going to have 2/3 people folks to approve it. I mean, and now you're trying to build a stadium and a convention center expansion as part of a joint project. It's just such a huge scale. And the mayor of San Diego, Kevin Faulkner, is still in the process of gaining information about this project that he hasn't even come out and endorsed it yet. So there's still a lot in this stadium topic to be played out. But right now, there's just this shadow of an unbuilt stadium that just cast a pall over this entire franchise entering the 2016 season.
Well, I hope the Chargers stay because it's a traditional market. They've been there since the AFL, but moving back on the field after last year, Mike McCoy got rid of a lot of his staff, brought back Ken Wisenhunt. If Ken wasn't available, would he have changed coordinators? And what do you think Wisenhunt's impact is going to be?
Yeah, if Ken Wisenhunt was not available, still believe the Chargers were moving on from Frank Reich, who in his 2 years as offensive coordinator, and not to say this is entirely Frank's fault, but the Chargers averaged 3.4 yards per carry in 2014, which is second to last in the NFL, and then 3.5 yards per carry last season, and that was dead last in the NFL. So they wanted someone who could maybe blend the run and pass game a little bit more effectively. And again, Frank Reich dealt with a number of personnel issues, so it wasn't all him, it wasn't all scheme. But the Chargers felt confident in what Ken Whisenhunt can bring to the table as an experienced play caller, someone who was the team's offensive play caller in 2013 when Mike McCoy was underway with his first season as head coach here in San Diego. We'll see how it plays out. I can tell you the one thing, if Ken Whisenhunt was not available, the Chargers might have hired an offensive coordinator that maybe was less experienced as a play caller, and Mike McCoy, the head coach, would be calling plays the way he did in Denver, the way he did a little bit in Carolina. But right now, the Chargers are happy to have Ken Whisenhunt. They think he's just going to bring more balance to this offense, and that familiarity he has with Phillip Rivers will only help.
You know, a lot of questions, obviously, as we mentioned at the top here, about where this team is going to be playing football here over the course of the next 2 years. I think there's a lot of questions, too, about just where this franchise is going right now. It feels like we're at least towards the end of the career for Phillip Rivers, Antonio Gates, maybe another year or two with him. What is the expectation for this Chargers team going into the 2016 season?
Well, it depends who you ask. If you ask Las Vegas, I believe the Chargers are 101 odds of winning the Super Bowl and dead last in the AFC West. The numbers were released yesterday by Bovada, a 13-2 odds. To win the division. And so that's behind the Raiders, the Chiefs, the Broncos. So they are underdogs from many standpoint on the outside. But you talk about people inside the building, they feel like, you know what, we were 4-12 last year, but we have the quarterback in Phillip Rivers. And they feel he's got another 4 years under contract. They think he's got plenty of good years left in him. But then they feel good about a young defense that they feel is on the rise. And that includes Joey Bosa, Fort Lauderdale guy. Can't go wrong there in Florida. And that's know your audience. That's what that was, guys.
That's right. We're big in Fort Lauderdale. We're huge in Fort Lauderdale, Michael. Absolutely.
I'm sure. And but they lose 9 games last year by one score. So they just feel that they're closer than maybe people are giving them credit for with some of the pieces they have in place. And if they can figure out their run game, they'll figure out this offense, and if the defense continues to improve with a lot of the young defense that they've added, and also some veterans like nose tackle Brandon Beebane, they think can help them in the run department. There's a lot of confidence you spend around Chargers Park. So we'll see where the expectations vary going in 2016.
Michael Gelkin, the Union Tribune in San Diego. You know, Michael, I think it was a logical leap for a lot of people to make that the Chargers may be looking to go offensive line with the third pick in the draft. A lot of injuries and subpar play in that unit last year. But the Chargers kind of laughed afterwards, said, we don't know where all this Ronnie Stanley talk came from. Obviously passed a chance to take Laremy Tunsil, and we know the story of what happened on draft night. But Bosa, surprising to you? A lot of people thought he would be selected by a 4-3 team. Looks like they're going to play him at 3-4 defensive end.
Well, I know my colleague Kevin Acey wrote a column like 2 days before the draft where he said the Chargers should take Joey Bosa, and he went on this thing, and it was partly because of what he'd been hearing around the situation. And I would have been shocked if the Chargers took an offensive lineman. Like I was saying for months leading up to the draft, I just couldn't see it based on what the Chargers did. They restructured their left tackle. They gave an extension to their right tackle. Their left guard was under contract. Their right guard was under contract. They needed a center, and we all knew that. And they ended up taking one in the third round and added Matt Slauson, the veteran from Chicago, shortly after the draft. But to draft a tackle would have been a surprise. And so, yeah, I was curious, and I'm not going to say that I knew that he was drafting Joey Bosa, but I didn't. If anything, I mean, I felt like I was missing some piece of the puzzle, but if I was, you know, forced to make a pick, I was kind of enjoying the no one really knowing, because I didn't know either. It was kind of just fun. But I thought Jalen Ramsey might have been the best pick just simply based on what you hear about the player and about the person. But, you know, Bosa makes a lot of sense when you look at him being a defensive end compared to an outside linebacker, which is where a lot of draft analysts were saying fit. I know Mel Kiper said outright, this guy isn't a 3-4 outside linebacker. He doesn't fit in a 3-4 scheme. The Chargers aren't going to draft him. And so there was a lot of that rhetoric, especially after the combine when Bosa was a little slower in the 40 than people maybe anticipated. But he makes a lot of sense as a 3-4 defensive end. He's 6'5". He can grow right now into a 270-pound frame. And they love what he can do with his hands. And they can, you know, they're in their sub packages 70% of the time. So he can be in a 3 technique and an even man front out of their 3-4 base and do a lot of the things that he's accustomed to doing at Ohio State. So there's a lot of optimism with Joey Bosa and how he fits in. Although you're right, before the draft, I think a lot of people were thinking he wasn't a fit in a 3-4 defense.
Sticking with the defense, Michael, two other guys the Chargers signed in free agency, Brandon Mebane, nose tackle, and former Jaguar, among other teams, Dwight Lowry at free safety. What did Tom Telesco and McCoy like about those two guys that signed them?
Yeah, well, they both are huge needs, first of all. Eric Weddle went to the Baltimore Ravens, and the Chargers needed the veteran presence in the back end of the defense. And that's what Dwight Lowry does. But this is also the fourth team he's been on in four seasons. So what he can bring at age 30, you know, he's not Eric Weddle, but, you know, we'll see what he can do. He's good in the spring, but, you know, he's not never been a superstar, and it doesn't seem he's going to be at this stage in his career. But Brandon Mebane is a guy they're definitely excited about. They're excited about him both, but Mebane in particular, just because he plays a position that they really haven't had that anchoring presence in quite a while. And now – Mebane's already played 9 seasons in this league, and let's wait to see what he can bring, you know, come in the fall. But here in the spring, his leadership, his presence, and there's the Chargers veterans believe that he could be kind of the missing piece between him and Bosa, and it could help the linebackers in terms of getting off blocks and just, you know, the double teams that those two guys up front are going to help create, especially with right defensive end. Corey Legit, who's a Miami guy, by the way, with Corey Legit, he being healthy, coming off of foot and knee problems last year. So they think that Mebane can be a part of a greater potion, which is improved front on the defensive line play that'll have a trickle-down effect on the entire defense.
Michael, last year, Melvin Gordon, the first-round pick for the Chargers, didn't get much done, obviously didn't get into the end zone, a disappointing rookie campaign for him. What didn't work last year? I know you said they need to get the running game going this year. What are the expectations for him going into 2016?
Well, I think they remain high, and they have to. He did show, to be fair to Melvin, I think this is something that often gets overlooked. He showed flashes last year. I know he only averaged, I believe, you know, sub 4 yards per carry. I think it might have been 3.3, 3.5, right around there. Not great, but he showed some things. Look at week 2. He had 3 rushes of at least 20 yards. He became the first Charger since Damian Tomlinson to do that in a single game. His Pittsburgh game later in the year was impressive. But I think over the course of the year, it was one thing after another. Schematically, the offense in San Diego with all the shotgun the Chargers ran was just so different than what he was accustomed to at Wisconsin, where it was power, power, power. He always had a fullback there. And he was seldom in shotgun, if ever. And that's pretty much what he did in San Diego. And so it's totally different. Your eyes are totally different, the way you're processing defense. And you're already, as a rookie, trying to adjust to the speed of the NFL game. But I think it all kind of just piled up. He started fumbling. He had nagging little injuries. And he got benched a couple times, including a Green Bay game, which was something of a return to home for a former Wisconsin running back who grew up in Kenosha. All his family and friends are there, and he gets benched in the second quarter after his second fumble. He also was injured that game. So factor in a knee injury later in the year that required minor, I'm told, you know, in terms of the threshold of what constitutes microfracture surgery. But nonetheless, microfracture surgery for him in early January, performed by Dr. James Andrews in Pensacola, Florida. but it was just one thing after another. So I think for Melvin, he needed the offseason. He put a ton of pressure on himself last year. And nobody, not even the fantasy owners, had a better hold of what Todd Gurley's stats were in St. Louis than Melvin Gordon did in San Diego. He was well aware of what other running backs, David Johnson, you name it, were doing in the league. and he wants to be that guy. He's been working hard at it. I mean, physically, the guy's a specimen. I mean, the amount that he puts in the weight room and all that, but it hasn't translated yet consistently. And I can't tell you with certainty it will this year, but the Chargers obviously are hoping for that.
Yeah, we met him at the Super Bowl, bro. When you say specimen, that is an understatement. That guy has not missed a workout. I tell you what, he was freakishly strong looking when we saw him, I guess, in late January, early February of this year. We'll wrap with this, Michael. Every time we see San Diego on the schedule, particularly on the West Coast, it's a house of horrors type situation for the Jags. Now, granted, the Chargers have often had the better team, but even relative to the disparity between talent level, the Jags seem to have no success playing against Phillip Rivers and company out there. Is that generally been the case with teams coming from the East Coast, or is it just one of those things that the matchup against Jacksonville has really fallen in San Diego's favor?
Yeah, I think it's more you guys. there's been some teams from the East Coast that have come here and played pretty well. I don't think it's part of something that's going on. You know, it's just a part of the cross-country trip. No, I think it's about the team you have that's making the trip. Maybe the Chargers just simply match up well, or they just happen to play well. Phillip Rivers, you look at his numbers against that defense, he's historically played pretty well, but I don't think anyone around the league can tell you the Jaguars are on the up. And I know people in San Diego are well aware of what you guys have done in the draft between Dante Fowler last year, getting him back for the first time, between Miles Jack, who Chargers fans were just praying the team would take early in the second round. They went tight end instead, addressing a huge need, and taking Hunter Henry, and then Miles Jack to the next pick to you guys. And then Jalen Ramsey, who was mock drafted by so many, including yours truly, to the team at number 3. So I think a lot of fans were warming up to that idea, and then the Jaguars took him as well. So they're well aware of the talent on defense. You know, offensively, you guys have shown some things at times. They've all come together. Blake Bortles, I mean, you guys are on the up. So I don't think anyone looks at the Jaguars and sees an easy win, despite what the history may tell you. They haven't faced this team before. And so I think it'll be a fun matchup on September 18th. And, hey, another chance to visit San Diego. Maybe the last, maybe not. We'll find out.
That's right. And we're going to send Bold City Brigade members. Those are the unofficial fan club of the Jacksonville Jaguars from all parts of Florida, Miami, Pensacola, Fort Lauderdale. They'll all be representing when we come out to San Diego in week 2 this year. Michael Gelkin, I'm a man who tries to play to the audience. We appreciate that. Michael, thanks for the time. As always, we'll see you out there on the West Coast early in the season.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
You got it, buddy. Michael Gelkin with the San Diego Union Tribune.
Hey. He was doing his Mick Foley impersonation there. Mick would always get a cheap pop out of the audience every night on Raw.
Oh, is that it?
Here at St. Louis, Missouri. Here at Jacksonville, Florida.
Right. So. Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. He goes Fort Lauderdale. Yeah, yeah. It's in the state of Florida. It's kind of like saying, well, you know.
Sacramento.
Right, Sacramento, because it's all just one big state. But I appreciate Michael. He's a very well-informed guy, and we appreciate him getting up early on the West Coast to talk a little Charger football, as we'll do these kind of previews throughout the course of the offseason, one per week, moving on to week 3 next week with the Baltimore Ravens. All right, that'll do it for that. Coming back, we'll hear a little bit more from Gus Bradley. Also, Blake Bortles, your quarterback, talking yesterday after the second organized team activity practice for your Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll hear from Blake as well coming up on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, don't forget this Friday night, a night out with the Frangie Show at Taps on State Road 210 in St. Johns County. It's the Frangie Show live with music by Klee's Crew, and it's all sponsored by Superior Roofing. You can join the Frangie Show Friday at Taps for a night of music and fun, so make your plans to do that. Gus Bradley finishing up some of his comments from yesterday. Ryan, you said what he said about Luke Joeckel was pretty similar to what he said the day before, but here is what he said when asked about the ideal plan for Luke Joeckel right now.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I really want him to compete. We really want him to compete at tackle. He went in there with the thirds. We do that just to give him a chance to look at it. Just same thing we did with So we're just looking to get the best 5 on the field, and I think that when guys have the ability to play both positions, we do that in training camp too, so it gives us more flexibility.
All right, they're going to – go ahead.
There's no chance in hell he's ever going to play guard in a real game. But like Gus said, ideally he performs well at tackle.
Right. Oh, what if he doesn't?
I think his salary is guaranteed, so I don't know what they would do with him if he not only doesn't play well, then you assume Beecham replaces him, but then what?
There's two different things. So there's not playing well, and there's not playing well enough to beat out Beecham,
yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
So if he loses the job to Beecham, he still could be the most valuable swing tackle they have.
Then he's your number three offensive tackle instead of a Josh Wells.
Right, but and since his salary is guaranteed, I mean, you don't think there's a unless they trade him, they're not going to cut Luke Joeckel if you're paying that salary, unless you think Josh Wells and Jeff Linkenbach and some of these guys are vastly superior to him.
Correct, especially with Beecham coming off the injury. I think Luke Joeckel will be on the roster, but I still think it's Beecham's job to lose when he comes back.
When he comes back, when that is, I don't know. How much time do you think Beecham needs to be given? Because obviously Luke's going to be playing, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be practicing, and he's going to, you know, Beecham's back, let's say, midway through training camp. Maybe Beecham's not ready for the first couple of preseason games, for instance. If Joeckel plays well, how much of a lead does he need to hold him off?
I think the kind of lead he needs is that Beecham isn't available to play in the second preseason game.
Okay.
Because Greg Olsen has said, like last year, he wants that five guys set by a third preseason game. Granted, it's a sliding scale based on injury and whatever, but I'm going with Dave Caldwell's thing at first week in August. Okay, first week in August, that gives them a week for the first preseason game. So if he is able to do that, play in two games, that should be enough to make a decision.
But that's a little pressure on Beecham to
clock
make
is
to
ticking.
Get back
yeah.
On time, you know, and do it the right way. And interesting because I don't see Joeckel as a guard, but I'm not nearly as definitive as you are that he'll never play a down at guard for this football team. I do find it interesting that so many of the local media seem to think that those two are playing somewhere on the offensive line.
To me, there's no chance of that because unless somebody else gets hurt, is the knock on Luke Joeckel all these years is he's not powerful enough, he's not strong enough. Don't you need that more inside?
See, that's what I think, and everyone says, are you much better run blocker than he is a pass blocker? Is that in that kind of relative?
He's not, well, I mean, I think he's only a tackle. You know, if you see him at guard in a regular season game, that means that they've broken the glass for an emergency.
We always make the comment, Tony, when you look at Luke Joeckel, he doesn't look big for a tackle, right? For a guard, guards are typically even more stout than that. Mackenzie Bernardo,
he's a bowling ball.
Is a guard,
yeah, yeah.
Right? You look at him, you say, oh, that's an offensive guard right there.
Kelvin Beecham looks like a guard, but they're going to play him at left tackle.
Right, well, that's why they signed him to that deal, with the hope that he would become the left tackle of the future. Let's get to Yannick Ngakoue. What has Gus seen from him in a couple of days out there on the practice field?
Well, it's hard. I mean, he told me yesterday he had a sack, so he shows me confidence, you know. But I think it's hard out here for pass rush because we tell him stay away from the quarterback, didn't get close, you know, and stop on the rush. So, but he's really explosive. I'm really intrigued. I'll be really excited to see him in training camp. Right now, he's just picking up some of the defense. We're doing some different schemes with him. And, you know, so we'll see how it comes together in training camp.
I'm curious about Ngakoue. It feels like he's a guy who obviously was a really good pass rusher coming out of Maryland. And the question is, do they have anyone that they trust getting on the field on first or second down behind Dante Fowler Jr. at that position? And I'm not sure what the answer to that is. I think I would like that answer to be Ngakoue, you know, to give him more opportunities to be on the field because he is an athletic guy. But I expect him to be a pretty decent pass rusher. Maybe not great, but pretty decent pass rusher. I'm curious to see if he can give him anything else.
Yeah, and I think the pressure's on him because there's not a lot of other guys besides him and Fowler that can do that. So I think they're going to give him a big opportunity in camp. You know, worry about the run-stopping stuff, you know, later on. Start developing a pass rushing set of moves so you can be effective right away.
But what about Bjorn Werner? I'm not saying you know he's going to revolutionize the team, but what if out of a scale of 1 to 100, what percent chance do you give him to make this team?
50.5. No.
10? I mean,
I think
shot?
It's in the 30s. I think.
Okay.
I mean, if he can make the position change back to what he did at Florida State, and he can, you know, show something. I don't want to call him a long shot, but a guy like him has a better chance of making it because of his position than, say, a Linkenbach, who has a lot of experience, but he's playing offensive line where you're either a starter or your reserve. They're always looking for pass rushers they can give you 15 to 20 snaps a game. They've moved Davis. They still think Davis and Skuda can give them some pass rush, but I think Werner's got a chance to make the team.
Who's the backup center when Bowanko's hurt?
I would think Shatley, but Bernadou has some center experience. Linkenbach has experience all over, but I don't think he started a game at center. So that
he's an interesting pickup, though, I think, because he is versatile. He's played a number of spots, and the timing seems to coincide with the idea, all right, we know Bowanko's going to be down for a while. We don't know how long. We better get another guy in here who's got some versatility.
Yeah, and the thing about him is he's the second most experienced starter on the roster outside of Bernadou.
Yeah.
Yeah, of the O-line. So, you know, he knows how to play the game. So it's always you can say they're throwing stuff at the wall, but you know, some combination of nine is going to stick.
Isn't that funny? The two most experienced from a starts perspective may not start here in Jacksonville, may both be backups potentially if they make the roster.
They were like barely mentioned free agent pickups.
Right. Honey. It is funny. Marquise Lee, he's stacking up those practices. We talked about Dante Fowler. We don't want to talk about stacking practices. We want to talk about stacking those sacks. For Marquise Lee, it's been a rough couple of years here in Jacksonville. Gus commented on him being out there back-to-back days.
Is it a matter of he does it one day and then you go, okay, great, now be healthy tomorrow and do it again and again and again?
I don't say be healthy tomorrow. I just say keep stacking them up, you know, and I think that's it. He had a good practice yesterday. He showed it again today. So just, you know, keep building and, you know, control you can control. And really, I know that's a cliche, but that's really all he has to do. You know, and if he lives in that world, he'll be really good. He has something that we don't have now, his explosiveness and his speed. So it's important that he keep progressing like he does.
I think they do have explosiveness and speed, and his name's Allen Robinson. Obviously, Lee can run down the field. If he stays healthy, it'll be fascinating to see what they do with him.
He is a different kind of speed, though. I agree with you. Allen Robinson, you don't average what he averaged per catch last year without being able to exhibit some kind of, you know, NFL caliber speed, but it's just the quick cuts and the in and out. I think the burst. I do think Marquise Lee, to my eyes, looks different than any other type of athlete that they have currently playing wide receiver on this football team. I think the best news on Marquise Lee is no news. Right, every week that goes by where you don't hear anything about Marquise Lee, unless that's because he's dropping every pass in practice, is a good week. I just, you know, he is one of the key guys. The thing you don't want is, you know, August 1st, oh, it's a hamstring twinge and it's going to be 2 weeks, but he'll be fine. He'll be back for the middle of preseason. Well, no, we've gone through that, and, you know, it's not like they're going to give up on him. They've invested significantly in him, a high second-round pick. He's still a very young guy. He's still a very talented guy, but if he wants to make an impact on this football team, he's got to be on the field. That's pretty obvious. So we'll get more from Blake Bortles, as a matter of fact, coming up, or some from Blake Bortles. Haven't heard from him yet this morning. One on the text line we can answer definitively right now, driven by Duval Ford. Will Marquise Lee practice during OTAs, training camp, preseason, or the regular season this year? Check for OTAs. Yes, he has practiced in OTAs. So we're off to a good start in that department.
I mean, he played in 10 games last year. He wasn't particularly effective, but he played in 10 games last year for the Jets.
It's just getting behind the eight ball, Tony, and getting off to slow starts and then having to play catch-up in the middle of the season. And as we know, once you get into the season, they're not focusing on getting guys up to speed. They're focusing on this week's game plan. How are we going to beat the Green Bay Packers, San Diego Chargers, and what can Marquise Lee do to impact that? Otherwise, you're kind of on your own to bring yourself along a little bit in those circumstances. It's an oversimplification, but not too far off the mark. All right, 641-1010. If you want to keep hitting us up on the text line, you're welcome to do that. We'll come back and get the fan feedback spotlight kicked out there, as well as hear from Blake Bortles a little bit as well. It's Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Yeah! You go, Hank. Man, we used to go see the Saners. Anybody knows who the Saners are? From Jekyll Island, Georgia. Tony, they come down to Church Hill's Attic back in the day. It's now the Chart House on the Bayfront in St. Augustine. And we used to drink till we were falling down. The Saners would do a bunch of covers, and they'd always do family tradition. And it was a damn sing-along, I'm telling you. A bunch of drunk college kids singing along to some Hank Williams Jr. Oh, I loved it. Today, we'll get to the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. You drink to get drunk, Hank. We know why you drink. You know why you roll smoke. Come on, Hank. Let's cut it off right there. We're going to get ourselves in trouble. All right, the question of the day, what is your favorite game day tradition? Which, by the way, someone said, hey, you guys used this one recently. We may have. Seriously, it's May. We sit around before the show every day.
Did. I think they're confusing game day tradition
with the superstition. Right, the superstition and tradition are not the same things. But I'm sure over the last couple of years of doing this program, we may have used this question before.
Well, yeah, just like the this date in football history is a repeat.
Every year.
Like, if you went back to the archive and just looked at May 25th, we had this conversation.
And matter of fact, Tyler, why don't you pull last year's from May 26th? I don't think we keep those. But if we did, then we could just play it tomorrow.
It'd be less work for you guys.
That would be like this day in football history. A year ago, we did this. Yeah. And boom, you could just roll it, and that would tell you all the things that we're talking about. Here's what I would like to say to all the many people who follow us on Twitter. At MT underscore 1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Tyler. If you've got suggestions, not going to hurt my feelings, we'd love to hear them. You know, question of the day. We try to come up with some, you know, topical stuff when it's relevant, but there's not always topical stuff. Can't really get into what you like from OTAs yesterday. You didn't get to see it, A. Nobody gets a report on it, B. I like that Blake didn't get hurt, right? So, I mean,
it's good stuff.
Right, that is good stuff. But so feel free to send us any suggestions. Not going to hurt our feelings. One iota. We also have a Twitter poll up. If you go to @MD underscore 1010XL, we asked you which of these four pass rushing options will gain the most sacks for the Jags in 2016. Ryan Davis, Malik Jackson, Unique Ngakoue, Dan Scuda, and we'll tell you where the results stand in a few minutes, but we'll leave that up there until tomorrow morning's show. A couple here on Blake Bortles, from Blake Bortles, starting with OTAs and how they've been going so far.
A couple of things that, you know, probably are pretty normal on the first day or two. But it's cool to see guys getting back into it and flying around and making plays. It's good to see, you know, Dante and some of the new guys, you know, that we haven't seen before out here running around and making plays. So it's fun. It's been good, guys. You know, it's night and day from this time this year compared to this time last year, which is cool to see, you know, how much further along we are and how much more, you know, guys kind of know the offense and are still continuing to learn it.
Ryan, Tony, and I have been inside while the OTA has been going on the last couple of days. You've been out there. Have you noticed something different in terms of either the readiness, the intensity? What have you noticed different that you can say?
What you do notice during the team drills is there's not a ton of teaching going on. It's like boom, 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 boom. And I talked to Chad Henne about that yesterday, and I said, explain to me how this works. And he says, well, they still started over, but instead of talk about it, it's okay. Talk about it, then move on. Talk about it, then move on. And so they're moving a lot faster through the playbook, which is common for second year.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And that's good news for this Jaguars offense that was already effective at times last year, hopefully finding that consistency. Blake mentioned during that last comment talking about OTAs how it's been night and day. He was asked to clarify a little bit. What does he mean by it's been night and day so far?
You know, I think everything's just sharper. It's crisper. If you turn on, you know, the OTA 1 and 2 from last year, I mean, there were all kinds of mental errors all over the place, guys messing up, doing stupid things. You know, it was kind of just, you know, we were trying not to completely look like idiots, I think, while practicing. And, you know, now guys are kind of flowing. They understand the offense. They get it. Guys are making calls and kind of, you know, making adjustments and doing things. Although we got a couple guys playing some new positions, you know, guys have a good understanding and a good base of knowledge of the offense. So it's developing a lot faster.
All right, Blake also, we'll wrap up here with this. He commented on a few of the other guys. And you may have heard these comments yesterday on 1010XL, but you can certainly check them out at Jaguars.com as well. But he was asked if there are any plays or schemes now going into year two of this Greg Olsen offense that he's more comfortable in now. Are there things he doesn't like, maybe, that he'd like to see cut down on?
I mean, there's a couple things that I mean, it's also difficult because, you know, there's things you go in week to week that you game plan for. This is, you know, the play we run versus defense coordinator. So every time we'll see him, we'll bring that up. But, I mean, there's a couple things that we ran throughout the season that that we haven't repped yet and probably won't, because there's just other things that are similar that we get more reps at. So why, you know, waste reps between two plays when you can get really good at one of them?
Bottom line, Ryan, I don't think if you've got plays you don't like, that don't suit you, a good offense coordinator is going to eliminate those from the playbook, right?
And that's what Greg Olsen said earlier this offseason. Is I asked him, I said, okay, second year progress made. I said, you add to the playbook. And he goes, no, opposite. You cut it down.
Out of these 10 core plays, three of them didn't work so well. Let's stick on these seven and build on those.
Yeah, and you know, you add different facets to that certain concept or whatever. But you know, it was sort of interesting that and Blake was sort of alluding to that is they know what they do well. Now let's try and do it very well.
Right.
And stuff that just didn't feel right last year, get rid of it.
There you go. All right, a little bit from Blake Bortles. They'll be back on the practice field tomorrow.
Yep.
And we'll hopefully be able to grab another player like we did with Paul Posluszny yesterday coming off the field. And we'll talk to Gus after practice tomorrow, meet with all the media, but he'll sit down with us in the Jaguars Today studios, the JOI studios down there, and you'll hear that conversation coming up Friday, provided that his schedule does not change between now and then. So that's the tentative plan for the next couple of days, at least on Jaguars Today. Again, getting back to the question today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of automobile dealerships. What's your favorite tradition? What do you like to do to psych yourself up on game day for the Jags? What kind of feedback did we get there, Tone?
Here's what we got from Irish Jaguar Pizza, Beer, Couch, TV. From Brian, plate of chicken wings, but I can't take the first bite until the Jaguars score. And I told him he's had some long afternoons, if that is the case. And I hope he had a big breakfast. He said, you do. You carbo load. You have the beer before the game starts, too. From Eric, it's always tailgating for me. Always fun and a varied menu. And from Stoff Prime, heavy drinking, circle ups, and the Move the Chains Duval chant. I love the circle up. I think that's a really cool tradition. That Move the Chains thing, it's I'm done with that.
As generic from my ears as it can be, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing that screams, hey, that's Duval, that's 904.
Yeah, and we just got one in on the text line driven by Duval Ford that I really like. He said he's ready to start his tradition of taking his son to games since he was born in July and is now ready
nice.
For football season.
You
so
know,
congrats.
Absolutely. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, any of my critiques of the game day tradition should be thrown right out the window, okay? Because, A, I'm not paying for – I do actually pay for season tickets now that I think of it. But – We're there on press credentials. Tony and I are not sitting in the stands. You know what I mean? We're in kind of an antiseptic environment watching the game on television in the radio studios down there. So, look, if you love Move the Chains, more power to you. You know what I mean?
I didn't like it when I was going to the game.
I love it. But then again, you know, I'm not sitting there in the press box doing any chant when I'm up there.
Nope.
A couple on the Facebook page, Chad Cox said, being the loudest and most obnoxious Jags fan that I can be, stand up, raise hell. Our fans have become complacent, he says. We need to go back to how it was in the 90s. We used to bang on seats and stomp so loud the stadium would be shaking. I haven't seen our house rocking in a long time. Raise hell and fire up the team on Sundays. Hashtag Jaguars Today, damn it. All right. And I would counter, Ryan, that when you are in close competitive games, often in the fourth quarter, that inspires the fan base to respond in kind, right?
Yeah, and you know, like you're saying, I can't hear any chants.
Right, it's right. As far as the chants are going, we don't know what's going on as far as that goes. But in terms of I remember those days, man. We all remember those days because back then you could go down on the field for the final few minutes of the football game and to sit in that bowl in the 90s when it was, as Chad described it, the seat banging, the whole place was shaking. It was a sight and sound to behold, no question about it. Kenneth said he used to love, his favorite tradition was hearing Leonard Skinner at the stadium sing Sweet Home Alabama. And they're not letting that one go, man. It's just going to be out there for a long, long time. And then I'll end with this one. Dan Lenahan, listening to Dempsey on the radio after the games, of course, I'm sucking up in hopes of supplanting Doom on Jaguars Today.
Oh.
He throws LOL. I don't know. Maybe we can have Dan in. We'll give Dan a shot. I don't know. You know, maybe it's time to expand our reach, Tony. Duval Doom has kind of monopolized the fan perspective here. Not that he doesn't do a terrific job. He does. But maybe he doesn't speak for everyone. Who knows? maybe we'll find out. O'Halloran, what you got coming up in the next few days in the pages of the Florida Times Union?
Tomorrow we have Hayes Carlion talk to Brandon Linder about his position change. That was going to run today. Got bumped because of other stuff. Saturday maybe something with Ryan Davis and Neil Sterling on their position changes. The Neil Sterling thing sort of under the radar this week, but pretty interesting. And then Sunday we'll have our NFL Jaguars package.
By the way, who would you vote for in the poll we had out there today? We got Ngakoue, we got Skuda, we got Malik Jackson, and we've got Ryan Davis.
I think I did vote for Ngakoue.
You did vote for Ngakoue.
Yes.
I'll probably go with Malik just because I'm trying to figure snaps, right? And I understand he's not going to be just in pure pass rush mode on all those plays, but I think he'll be on the field more, so I'd probably vote for Malik. Tony, what about you?
I voted Malik Jackson, but I think the numbers for he and Ngakoue are going to be pretty similar. I expect probably 6 to 8 sacks.
Boy, if your third round pick, who's your backup Leo, can give you a half dozen sacks, that's a hell of a good start right there. Think about it. Dick Beasley had 4 last year. Remember
right.
The whole pick Vic phenomena that went on leading into the draft? He had 4, and they're not down on Vic Beasley in Atlanta.
Changed his position.
They made him a strong side linebacker. Yeah,
to
You're
me,
right
that's
about,
an indictment.
Maybe it is. They're not kicking him to the curb, Ryan.
They didn't cut him.
They didn't cut him. So I guess you probably put it much more accurately than I did. By the way, the early returns, about 200 votes in. Ngakoue's got about 49% of it. Malik Jackson, 38%. So it's a two-man race. Ryan Davis and Dan Scuda battling for third place in the single digits right now. We'll leave that out there on Twitter. If you go to @MD_1010XL anytime, if you haven't voted today, cast your vote. All it takes is a single button click, and we'll update you on the results of that tomorrow. Thanks to our friends at Metro Rooter. They bring you the show every Wednesday for all size plumbing jobs. Residential plumbing, I've had them out to my house whenever I've had issues. Got some old plumbing at the house, and they always are spot on fixing it up. Fast, efficient, affordable, commercial plumbing, industrial plumbing, you name it. Same-day service, weekends included. The right people with the right equipment is the reason Metro Rooter has been serving Jacksonville so well since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911, 695-1911. Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Thanks to Michael Gelkin of the Union Tribune in San Diego, for Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato. I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll say hello to the boys of the Midday Chalk coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.